Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. For those people that are familiar with this, this is when we do Harshman Travel Radio. Pam Harshman has been a customer of ours when she was in the MLM business a long time. And then when we started Building Fortunes Radio, I figured what a great person to have as far as a guest host on Building Fortunes Radio. So when I called her up and I said we were looking for some guest hosts, she says, you know, Peter, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And I said, okay. And she said, we're going to become travel agents. And I said, okay, and what kind? Like the card-carrying kind, you know, they just buy a travel agency, you know, for 500 bucks like me when I was in Illinois and my college student friend kind of stuck me with six of those for $3,000. I'm like, okay. She says, no, not that kind. We're going to be the real kind. I'm like, good, because we could probably use a radio show talking about travel. People in home-based businesses like to travel. It's part of their wish list, their bucket list. They travel back and forth to conventions, things like that. Everybody loves it. Well, not everybody. Lots of people like to travel. So I knew that that would be really good, and I knew that she would do a great job as a travel agent. And then she told me she was going to do this with Ron, which wound up to be that much better, because Ron's a clinical psychologist, so that helps me out. I get a chance to talk to him before and after these radio shows. So fringe benefits of having Pam being a travel agent. So there you go. So having said any or all of those things, I knew that they'd be great at what they did. And as we've traveled through the years with Harshman Travel, we suggest that you always sign up for the newsletter, harshmantravel.com. But more importantly, always remember that when you're working with travel, if you're booking with them or making your travel arrangements with them, you're not paying extra. The other side of the equation pays the commissions and any other fees, so you don't have to worry about that. So you get great people, superior service, all of that sort of stuff, stuff you probably didn't even know you'd be able to get as a result of working with Harshman Travel. And especially now, you know, I'm always big on, you know, especially now, this is the best time to be working with them. This is really the best time to be working with them because all of the different rules, regulations, changes, maybe changes in schedules because of the coronavirus and all of those other types of travel modifications, you really need to have somebody on the inside that knows what they're talking about, because in a world which seems to be ruled by levels of incompetence, you can safely make sure you're getting the right answers by working with Harshman Travel. So we usually go through introductions first, and we'll do ladies first as usual, and then towards the second half of this, after a commercial break, Ron always comes back and gives us the good news relative to what's happening in travel. So, Pam, over to you.
Hi, Peter. It's good to be here again tonight. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome back.
Yeah, a little bit about my background is I started my working years as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest, and then moved myself up in through the ranks to court administration. Did that for several years until Ron and I met, and then I moved down to South Florida. Didn't want to start at the bottom of the ladder again, so I kind of was looking for something that would be a little bit more self-independent and hopefully working from home. Ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license and sold real estate for several years in South Florida. But after a few years, I discovered that really wasn't my niche, and I went and got my life and health insurance license because that would, too, allow me to be a little bit more independent working. Absolutely loved it as I got a job selling Medicare supplements to the senior population. Loved visiting with them. It was just that kind of hit the spot at that time. However, as you had said something earlier, I had seen a lot of MLMs and home-based business ads coming across my Facebook news feed, and that is where we met, and I dabbled in that for a bit as well. I had some winners, had some losers, but gained a real good friend out of it, that was for sure. One day when I was working down in the Naples area, a girlfriend of mine called, and we were chit-chatting while I was driving, and she said something to the effect of, "Have you and Ron ever thought about being travel agents?" And that just really hit a nerve with me, because it hadn't been, you know, a week, 2 weeks before that Ron and I had been talking about if we were wanting to travel, now would be a good time to start thinking about it. We were baby boomer empty nesters, and our health was still pretty good, so it would be a great time to start traveling. So the more I got to thinking about it, the more excited I was to get home and talk to him about it. And once there, we kind of went back and forth. We weighed the pros, the cons, did some research, and decided to go for it. And we spent our time getting the proper education and licensures and all that good stuff. We've done a lot more travel than we probably would have done otherwise. And at the same time, we've helped a lot of people stretch their travel dollars as well. So it's been a win-win for us all the way around.
Excellent. Okay, good. And over to you, Ron.
Alrighty. Thanks, Peter. Good to be with you again. My background's very different than Pam's. Spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, very heavily involved in my own clinical practice, doing clinical work, but also chose to get involved in the self-regulatory aspect of the profession, and got heavily involved in the professional organizations, sat on the executive board of the Canadian Psychological Association, and was the elected chair of the applied division of that organization. Also represented the Canadian Association with the American counterpart. So very much involved sitting on ethics boards, professional affairs committees, and really going through the nitty-gritty of how the profession is supposed to work, what self-policing aspects were important, unfortunately seeing how some people did not handle their professional responsibility all that well and ended up being hauled before the ethics boards and pulling licenses and all that kind of good stuff. But at the same time, was heavily involved in my clinical practice. All through grad school, I had been advised by a number of professors that it would be a very good idea prior to going into private practice to really get as much experience as one could working with different clinical populations, so that when you did go into private practice, no matter who called you up or walked in your office door with an appointment or whatever, you know, you wouldn't be caught off guard. So I spent the first good number of years after grad school working for pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems, and got as much varied experience as I could working with very, very different clinical populations. When I did get into clinical practice, though, it didn't take me very long to start specializing, working with young couples, doing a lot of premarital therapy, a lot of sexual therapy, a lot of work with kids with learning disabilities, premarital, postmarital, etc. As a result of working with that population, unfortunately, it meant starting to see a lot of couples that were going through divorce and involved in very heavy-duty child custody disputes. And it was just coincidental that when I started specializing in that area, there were some major changes coming about in both the Canadian and the American judicial systems. Up until that time, it had pretty much been a pre-drawn conclusion that if you had a young couple going through a divorce and there were young children involved and there was any dispute over custody, the courts would almost always give custody to mommy, visitation to daddy, and a lot of cases were coming up at that time that really clarified that that was not only not a good predisposition, but in unfortunately many, many cases, it was a very bad predisposition. So the Canadian judiciary was able to move first because in Canada, the Divorce Act is a piece of federal legislation, so all divorces in Canada are handled at the Supreme Court level in every province, and that meant that there was a lot more standardization, a lot more formality, a lot more regulations in place, etc. So for the Canadian judiciary to make a decision about changing that predisposition, it was very easy. They simply said, going forward, any decisions made about child custody had to be based on the psychological best interests of the children involved. And that made a lot of sense. It was a good move, obviously. The only bump in the road was that it was very difficult for them to then determine what was in the psychological best interests of the children involved, because the judges certainly didn't have experience or knowledge in that area. Court personnel did not. Attorneys working in the family law division of the bar associations did not. So as a result, we ended up with two brand new subspecialties developing, one in the field of clinical social work and the other in the field of clinical psychology. And just by happen chance, I was at the forefront of that major move. I was one of the first psychologists in Canada to be appointed by the Supreme Court to actually do custody investigations, go into court as the court's witness, not a hired gun for mommy or daddy, but go in as the court's witness and testify as to what, in my clinical opinion, would be in the best interests of the children involved. And it was a heavy-duty thing because in order to do an adequate investigation, it really meant individually interviewing mommy and daddy and the kids all together and the kids individually, seeing mommy with the kids, seeing daddy with the kids, interviewing a lot of the people that were corollary to the situation, neighbors, school teachers, school counselors, priests, ministers, rabbis, relatives, anybody who came involved with the children and their parents. And then on top of being able to do the investigation and coming up with your own clinical judgment as to what would be in the best interest of the kids, it then meant going into court and as the court witness delivering your report and your recommendations. And in an adversarial system, you had one attorney who thought you were, you were able to walk on water because you were the one recommending custody for his or her client, and the other attorney had the professional responsibility to try to attack your report and attack you and, basically say that you made the wrong recommendation. And the first time that happened, it was a learning experience because I went into court, gave my report, went and testified, was examined by the one attorney, cross-examined by the other attorney, and the other attorney obviously tried to catch me up and find any mistakes that I made or whatever. But as soon as the judge called for a recess and we all went into the vestibule outside the courtroom, that same attorney who'd been trying to calm me down came up and asked me for my business card because he was very impressed with me and wanted me to be involved in another case that he was involved in representing, different people. So as a result of that kind of thing, it also spread out that I ended up doing some guest lecturing at the Faculty of Law, talking to law students about the use of expert witnesses, what to look for in a report, how to examine, how to cross-examine, and all that kind of thing. And at the same time, doing some professional development seminars, both at social work conventions and psychology conventions, talking to other clinicians who were interested in getting involved in that brand new subspecialty. So it was very interesting, very challenging, did that for a good number of years. And then just by chance, I was visiting with some friends in South Florida, and they introduced me to a psychiatrist friend of theirs who was doing a lot of criminal forensic work in the South Florida courts. He was very, very impressed with what I was doing up in Canada, said that he was aware that the American judiciary was following suit, but nothing had happened yet in South Florida, and basically asked me to give up my practice in Canada and move down to South Florida and go into practice with him, and he would continue obviously doing all the criminal forensic work, but he wanted me to develop a whole civil forensic section of the practice and introduce the whole concept to the South Florida courts. So I saw that as a big challenge, took him up on his offer, did move down, and started meeting with a number of the family law practitioners and a number of the general masters who were handling divorces in South Florida. Got very, very open-arm welcome reception to the whole concept and the whole idea, and ended up being the first psychologist to be admitted as an expert witness in child custody disputes, both in Dade and Broward County courts. So it was, again, very, very challenging, but very rewarding. After Pam and I got involved, we stayed in East Florida for a little while. We then decided to semi-retire, moved to Southwest Florida. As she said, she got involved in the home-based business multi-level marketing. Although I wasn't interested in that or involved, I certainly supported her in doing that. But when she came home and said that she really wanted us to think about becoming travel agents, as she said, we had recently been saying, you know, we talk about travel. We weren't doing travel. If we wanted to do it, now was the perfect time. So the possibility of becoming travel agents really opened up a real new avenue for us. As she said, we decided if we were going to do it, we would do it the right way. We would get properly trained and licensed and all that kind of good stuff. Looked into it, made the decision to do it, and as a result, we have done a lot more travel ourselves. We've connected with a number of good travel vendors that we feel comfortable representing and promoting. And as Pam said, we've also been able to help a lot of folks make the best out of their travel time and dollars. And I will shut up.
Excellent information. We're going to be right back after this little commercial break.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back. Peter Mingles here with Pam and Ron Harshman. Ron's going to cover what's new in the travel industry. So, Ron, over to you.
All righty. Thanks, Peter. This week has been very, very interesting. A lot of stuff coming up, both good and bad. In terms of people thinking about traveling over the next while into the holidays, at this point, unfortunately, it is still very much up in the air. The U.S. travel industry, I am quite sure, is being impacted, unfortunately, by politics. So at the end of this week, I would expect that at least the influence that it has had will change. It may get worse, it may get better, but it will definitely change. Internationally, the same thing has been going on, not necessarily because of politics. I'm sure everybody has heard about the atrocious things that have happened in France recently. I'm sure that many people have heard on the news that most of Europe is now experiencing higher rises in COVID cases and doing something that most medical people feel is very stupid, but they're doing it anyway. They're closing down, and it's kind of been shown that closing down the entire country has much more negative impact than positive, and to steal the words of one of the people running for president here in the United States, you don't want the cure to be worse than the problem it's trying to solve. And unfortunately, that's what many of the sane medical people are not only predicting but are stating very clearly is going to be the outcome. But because of that, we're seeing that some of the European cruises that were starting to get going up may be curtailed because the country's closing down completely. Even our next door neighbor, Toronto, the government recently just came out just the other day that a 14-day mandatory quarantine is still going to be there for at least another month, with the federal government announcing that the mandatory isolation order and travel restrictions were now going to be extended to November 30th. So it's just not clear right now what's going to happen. On a more positive note, the CDC came out just the other day with a 40-page document basically saying that they were lifting the no-sale order, and they were they came out with this document that in essence is a check-off list of things that they want the different cruise lines to do in order to be able to start cruising. Most of the cruise lines have said that to get a ship going from being off the market, out of use, back into use, can take up to 60 days. So now we are seeing a number of the cruise lines predicting that they will be going in December, by the middle to latter part of December, and we'll kind of have to see how that materializes. I know that each of the cruise lines is working together through the Cruise Line International Association, which is also handling the cruise lines, you know, throughout the world, basically. It's not just North American cruise lines. But they have been very assertive in saying that they want to be sure that when cruising opens up, that it will provide the safest environment for people. And they are still expecting a major, major rush by people to cruise. The number of reservations, particularly for 2021 and into and up to the end of 2022, are at a high level, much higher than they were before the COVID hit for 2021. And as I've said before on this show, they're finding that a lot of the reservations are new people to cruising, or people new to cruising. So it's not just the cruise passengers wanting to get back into their routine, but the activity is drawing new potential clients, and the cruise lines are continuing to work with setting up new ports of call, new itineraries. Certain new ships are expected. Some of the cruise lines have sold off some of the older, efficient cruise ships that they have. So they've been sold primarily from the North American market to the European market. So you've got some of the smaller cruise lines there acquiring some of the ships from Carnival Corp, both from Holland America and from Costa, primarily, and from Princess, I guess, as well. So it's at this point still fluid, but I think moving positively. A lot of the concern about COVID right now, and this is why I say a lot has unfortunately been impacted by politics. I was just reading a study just the other night that they were saying up to 94% of the positives on the testing are false positives. Indication that they're wanting one to draw is that the whole COVID thing is becoming politicized and made into a much bigger and much scarier situation than it really is. You've got a number of very involved physicians, very highly trained very expert physicians with lots of degrees, head of epidemiology departments at major universities, really countering some of the government medical people who have been doom and gloom, and these other people have been saying that the mortality has mortality rate has dropped over 85%. That they're coming up with new medicines. They're very clearly expecting that they will have a vaccine within a relatively short period of time, and most of the physicians that are actually working in the field are saying that the whole approach has been the science of fear, very much overriding the science of medicine. And in fact, one of the very well-known physicians from one of the universities in the state of New York has come out with a book that basically is titled, I don't remember the exact title, but the title is basically Fear versus the Science of Medicine. So there's a lot going on there. I think at the actual travel industry level, we have a number of the locations of all-inclusive resorts going out of their way to try to bring people back. Dominican Republic, certain parts of Mexico, the facilities that are there are open and healthy, and the governments are even offering free insurance packages for people so that they have no fear if they come and they get sick. The government's going to take care of them. They don't even have to worry about health insurance. So there's a major move to get back. The airline industry obviously is being decimated because of the failure of the government to come up with the assistance that they were hoping was going to come in the package that has been basically railroaded by a lovely lady who hopefully will be retired this week. But in any event, without getting overly political, too late. The major thing is that the travel industry is expecting to come back very, very strong. They are not at all making light of the pandemic. They are not at all making light of the need to do whatever is humanly possible to provide as safe and healthy an environment as possible. But Cruise Line International Association and a number of the cruise lines, for example, went so far as to threaten the CDC with a lawsuit if they did not lift the no sail ban, and as a result of that threat, it has been lifted. So at this point, Peter, I wish I could say, you know, count on being able to go travel again by such and such a date in such and such a year. I wish I could, but I can't. What I can say is that next time we have a radio show, we will hopefully at least have an indication of how the people voted, and that should give us an idea of whether we will have a country or whether we will be able to forget travel because we won't even have a country. But I tend to move into politics again, and I shouldn't. So, what I can legitimately say is I think we are getting closer to having some specific answers and dates. I know that the people who are in charge of doing what they're supposed to do are doing what they are supposed to do. The cruise lines have all modernized and modified every one of the cruise ships with different air transfer possibilities. They have changed the programming to take into account social distancing. They have taken into account the need for more inclusive medical services during cruises. They've taken into account the need to establish regulations in terms of monitoring health and temperature and all that kind of good stuff for both crew and passengers. So I'm optimistic that once we get green lights, we will see things take off very quickly. And even with the air industry, I think right now it's in semi-decimation, but money does a lot to turn that around. And I think as soon as we get some assistance going in that direction, they will be back. A number of the airlines have in fact increased the number of itineraries and destinations and flights in anticipation of the increase in travel demand that is very, very much predicted and anticipated as soon as all of this stuff is lifted. So everybody's moving in the same direction, and until and unless I see any clear indication that that's not going to happen, I will remain optimistic that it will happen. And again, I've blabbed too long, so I will shut up.
Well, all great information. All great information. And the holidays are going to bring a lot of this stuff to a boil when it comes to how people are going to be reacting. While you were talking, I was thinking about what I used to do when my parents, well, my dad was alive and my grandparents were around. We always used to fly to New York,
right,
and we would go into the city, and all of that stuff wouldn't be happening right now. And we'd be, you know, Macy's Day Parade.
Not only COVID, but for the other craziness that's going on in New York, I know that we've talked about moving some relatives from New York down here, and you're not alone. I think that there is a major exodus So yeah, a lot of that stuff is different, and you know, some of the stuff people are just not prepared to look at being locked down, especially when sane voices of science are saying that it is contraindicated. So
yeah, and I could just imagine. I grew up mostly Italian, and if, you know, when my grandfather and my grandmother were alive, and we would go to their house for, you know, either Christmas Eve or stuff like that, I could imagine right now fisticuffs in my own house, because I would want to give my grandfather a kiss on the cheek, and he'd be, come on, Gramps, come on over here. And my aunt, I'll single her out, my Aunt Gray, who, by the way, was a nurse practitioner, who, if she was sold on this whole mask thing, she'd be throwing a hockey body slam in front of me so I couldn't even give my grandfather a kiss on the cheek or my grandmother. And, I mean, that would be fisticuffs inside my own house. So this is the emotions are really charged relative to these things. And I could see how sometimes on planes, like, fights could break out or all those types of issues, because these are emotionally charged situations, because so many people are so emotionally invested in their own belief systems. So they've done, you know, like, what was his name? I don't know, one of those guys, Oli, and what was it? One of the guys say, Ollie, you really screwed this up, or one of these things. They've really had a way to tangle this mess up for whatever reasons or not. So I don't see it unraveling, and I think it really come into a further head, because people want to travel. And people want to see their family.
Yeah, people want to enjoy their holidays. I saw a thing on Facebook that, you know, really kind of epitomizes the whole thing, that they said that at funerals you could have more people than you could have for turkey, for Thanksgiving dinner. So the invitation was going out. We are having a ceremony for the death of my pet turkey, and we're going to be serving refreshments, so we will be having a number of people over to celebrate, to celebrate the funeral.
It's crazy. So who knows where all this shakes out, but who knows where it's all going to shake out, but I think it's going to get messier before it gets better. So the very interesting thing is that you're going to want to really pay attention to the travel restrictions and the travel updates, because they're probably going to be changing by the day, regardless of who's president or who's now whoever. Right. Even more reasons why, if you need to travel, you want to pick Harshman Travel. So if you go to, and I know, I think Canada keeps deciding, well, are we going to open or we're not going to open? We're going to open or not going to open?
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
Yep. So thanks for being here. Thanks for all your great insights. And I can't wait to what we're going to say next week. That's all I have to say.
to keep politics out of the conversation.
That'll be really tough. Well, we'll see you next week, everyone. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Check them out, harshmantravel.com.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.